by going to the website of Heavens Above. Is that true, Paul? Go ahead.
Yeah, that one would work. I have an app, an ISS app that I use for that. So it's nice. It'll tell me a day before, you know, a possible sighting. You know, it'll actually give me a notification. And then you see that, and then you click on that, and it'll give you further details of what I'm giving you. You know, the magnitude, brightness, direction, elevation, where it's going to start, where it's going to finish, how high it's going to be elevation-wise. So that's a pretty good app. I'm trying to think of what the heck you call that. I don't know. It's had it for quite a while. They just call it the ISS detector. So you can put it into a phone, you can put it into a tablet. In my case, it's my tablet. So, anything else on that before I go on, Dick?
Yeah, I think at 6:12 in the morning these days, it's still dark out. So in the southwest, we'll see darkness. We'll see it very well. As it goes to the northeast, it's heading towards sunrise, and so the sky is getting brighter in that direction, I believe, at that time. Of you, Paul, T2RIW.
Yeah, that's why you only see these things at dusk and dawn, you know, just after, before dawn and right after dusk. You know, sometimes it's actually still pretty bright out, and you'll see it. So that's pretty good. The only time I've ever seen anything worth talking about that was not during dusk or dawn is when they actually had space launches either from Florida coming up the coast. Years ago, they would launch a space shuttle up to 63 degrees north, and you would see the three RS-25 rocket engines on the back of the shuttle. You would see it as one light from a distance. But those days are long over. We'll have to wait until the island gets, you know, more launches with the Antares rocket, which is actually coming up, I think, I think that's the end of November, beginning of December for an Antares launch. That's when they launch from Wallops Island, Virginia, and they go to the International Space Station with a cargo freighter called Cygnus mounted on top of the rocket. Talking about Wallops, another company is now going to move in, launching orbital rockets from Wallops called Vector. Vector has launched a couple of suborbital flights, one from California, one from Georgia. So they were successful, and now they're working on a larger rocket. And within a couple of years, I think they want to do it within a year or two, be able to launch from Wallops Island. They're going to pick up, you know, probably use another pad. They won't use 0A that Antares is using. They'll give them another pad to launch from. And they plan on launching probably two flights within the next couple of years. And then more after that, they plan on launching small payloads into orbit. So it's not a big rocket. But, you know, we're talking about CubeSats or maybe, you know, 200-pound satellites at the most. It's called Vector. Vector is the name of the company in a rocket. We talked about lava tubes on the moon, and they're still investigating that, but I looked more into it, and they have confirmed a lava tube about 31 miles long and about 300 feet wide, so in the future they'll be able to use that as, you know, build a whole town and something like that, about 300 feet under the ground, and they use the combination of the Salina spacecraft that was in orbit, not in orbit anymore, by Japan, and we have a spacecraft still in orbit around the moon called MRO, the LRO, Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, LRO. MRO is the one around Mars. Let me drop it. And these radar, and they were able to penetrate the ground to confirm what the Japanese one had picked up a couple of years ago. So I thought that was good information. And you know, a couple of different websites haven't seen it in any magazines yet, but you could see it in a couple of reliable websites, including Time Magazine. It's probably true that this lava tube exists on the moon. Another thing I came across was Paul White. He's an astronaut. He just died, 85 years old. Paul White, people, you know, it's not a common name, but he was on the first crew that went up to Skylab in the 1973 time frame, and he was part of the group that actually rescued that, prepared the Skylab. Skylab was launched and had a lot of problems. Solar panel didn't deploy, and the other solar panel was completely ripped off. They had some other problems as well. So the first crew, instead of just going up there for a month, part of their job was to get that Skylab operating. And Paul White's now 85 years old, died of cancer, unfortunately. And he did a couple of other missions as well. He was the pilot on STS-6, one of the early flights, the first Challenger. First Challenger mission to ever go up, and he also had on board Starry Musgrave, one of your favorite people, Dick. He was on that flight as well. So another good guy gone, but that's the way it goes. Skylab was up there for a couple of years, from 73 what till 79, I think it came flying out of orbit. Wound up burning up over Australia. China is in that kind of a doghouse now. Right now, they have a space station up there. They do not know where it's going to crash. Tiangong 1 is actually out of control, and they're just hoping it comes down in a nice, safe place. But it's not as big as the Skylab, though. Skylab was very big. Very big satellite. Give you an idea how big it was. International Space Station, you know, that size is about five times bigger than the Skylab. So, you know, it took all those years to put up the whole International Space Station. Imagine how big this thing was. I think it was around almost 200,000 pounds. You're flying out of Earth orbit at the same time. Wound up parts of it landing in Australia. Let me drop it. Okay, I don't know if you look on any of the websites, but NASA had an interesting story about an asteroid that wound up coming down near Earth, very high speed, but came from the north. You know, the ecliptic plane, you know, layout of all the planets. It didn't come from the ecliptic plane. It came from the north down, you know, heading toward the northern part of the sun. And they figured out from the trajectory that it was coming in at that it couldn't be part of our solar system because, the angle it was coming in on, it was virtually straight down almost. So they figured out it couldn't even be coming from the Oort cloud. It came from outside our solar system completely, somewhere in the galaxy. That thing was about a quarter of a mile in diameter. And this is about a week ago now, I guess. And it came down. It was going so fast, picked up the gravity of the sun. And so that meant it wound up going from the north all the way to the south, and then started making a turn and wound up going back along the ecliptic plane, but a little bit north of it. And they know that at that speed, they gave it in miles per hour. They gave it a mile per second. I converted it, so it was around 58,000 miles per hour. Turns out it's faster than the escape velocity of the sun, so that will not be coming back ever again, even millions of years from now. That's gone forever. So, interesting. I mean, it was a big, pretty big, quarter of a mile. It came within 15 million miles of the Earth. So, I mean, it wasn't that close, but close enough. And considering that either an asteroid or a comet, they really haven't confirmed what they're going to call it yet. It came at 15.8 miles per second. And it's leaving here at 56,800 miles an hour. So that was pretty cool. We drop it. We were talking about food on the International Space Station last week. Sure enough, they're cutting up some more salad for themselves up there. Joe Ackerberg is really involved with the, you know, one of the astronauts is really involved with the veggie program. So they cut up half of it, split it up among the astronauts, and they put salad dressing on it. It's supposed to be pretty good. Instead of having just one plant growing, this is about the fourth different time they've utilized this veggie machine. It looks like it's about, I don't know, a square yard. It's not too big to grow these things. Now they're growing, instead of one at a time, they're growing three at a time, so they have a variety. And after they were done with that, there's a brand new one that they just sent up that they're going to be installing in one of the other modules. It's supposed to be much bigger than this one. I haven't found out how big yet it is, but they're going to be growing like five different things at one time, including some kind of small cabbages, different variety of stuff. So, you know, they think it's great. They like to look at it. Looks like there's green stuff up there growing. Of course, they like to eat it as well. So this is all preliminary work. Eventually, they'll have to be doing this on the moon and eventually on Mars. And this is where it all starts. This has been going on for the last, I guess, 5 years now. The veggie program. I have other topics if you want to cover it, but for now, that should be it. Back to you, KQRIW. This is WS2M for the space portion of the TechNet.
The Earth is 93 million miles from the Sun. This object came within 15 million miles of the Earth, so that's 16% of the distance between us and the Sun. From one point of view, as far as the solar system is concerned, it came relatively close to us. But 15 million miles is 62 times the lunar distance, so 62 times further away than the Moon. But only 16%. And that thing's moving pretty fast. And moving that fast, yes, not part of our solar system. What was that velocity again, Paul, in either miles per second or miles per hour? Your choice.
I wrote it down here. It's 15.8 miles per second. I converted it, and it was 56,880 miles per hour. And they have a nice diagram. They show the thing, where it came from, dropping out of the north of the ecliptic, and then, you know, passing between the planets and going, making a 90, it really looks like a 90 degree turn almost, actually probably better than a 90 degree turn, because it's going to wind up going out, not where it came from, but more or less just maybe it looks like a few degrees north of the ecliptic, maybe probably 10, 15 degrees north of that. Back to that.
So was this general trajectory pretty much in the plane of our solar system, or was it pretty much perpendicular to the plane of our solar system, Paul?
It came in perpendicular. I mean, it looked like it was heading directly to the sun on one side I was at. you know, like if we're going to hit the North Pole of the sun and travel there, actually pass, you know, below the, you know, from the north to the south part, and then because of the gravity of the sun, it turned south of the sun, you know, passing the South Pole, heading out that way. So, like, it, you know, it did better than a 90-degree turn.
So it's using the sun as a gravity assist as far as a galactic navigation is concerned. So if you consider this a galactic, an object navigating itself through the galaxy, it used our sun as a gravity assist to change its velocity probably and definitely change its direction. It almost made a right ankle turn, I think you said that, Paul?
Yes, yes, and it looks like it went in between the sun and Mercury, you know, in between that orbit, you're looking at it. And they'll have it posted for a couple more days, you know, on the NASA site. I found it on a couple of the other sites, but NASA was good. Happened on October 25th. And they're calling it A/2017. As in uniform 1, so A2017U1, you put that in and you're going to get all kinds of information about this this rock, whatever it is, a quarter of a mile in diameter. I mean, if that was to hit the Earth, I mean, that would be, I don't know if it would destroy the Earth, but that would be probably city or state or country. You know, event, it would definitely wipe out a big area back east.
Do you know roughly the size of the Tunguska event? How big was that projectile? Has anyone ever made an estimate?
Yeah, that was, what, 1908? And I thought that was... Wasn't that one... I thought that was one-sixth of a... I'm trying to remember the number. I know Carl Sagan did an estimate on it. I don't want to give you the wrong number. It might have been like 600 feet in diameter. For some reason, I'll have to check. But it was big. But nothing hit the Earth. I mean, it came down into the lower atmosphere and ignited, completely disintegrated above the surface. And that's why for thousands and thousands of feet in any direction, all the trees were knocked down, you know, probably a half a mile or more.
Sounds to me like this device that just came by the sun is a significant number of times bigger than the Tunguska event. So if it hit our atmosphere, it would have been pretty significant as I see it, so Paul.
Oh, yeah, and especially at that speed, you know, that's probably, what, 20,000 miles an hour faster than an asteroid would hit.
The object that created all those broken windows in Russia a couple of years ago, do you remember the approximate speed that was traveling, Paul?
I don't remember. Chablinska, I think is the name of the place. I think that's the way it's pronounced. Yeah, and they have all kinds of video on that. All the people in Russia are all panicky. They all have their dashboard cams on their cameras. You know, they ride around like that all the time. So there's a lot of recorded evidence of that thing. So yeah, they know the speed. I don't know offhand. That was really something. I think 1,000 people got hurt. I don't think anybody got killed. A lot of glass broke, a lot of damage. Nobody got killed, but 1,000 people hurt.
I guarantee that was a pretty loud bang on that device. And although we don't know the speed, they didn't say that it was moving so fast that it wasn't part of our solar system. That object that hit Russia was part of our solar system. Isn't that true, Paul?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would be part of our solar system. No question about it. Well, this number keeps going up. We're up at 34,000 on Long Island. That's not good.
Where is the majority of the outage? Does the map show you where the outages that are occurring up home?
It was a 4-to-1 ratio for, you know, for a whole net. Suffolk winning. And, we were beating Nassau by about 4-to-1. But now it's, cut it to less than half and half. So it's 13,000 on Nassau.
UPS.
And 21,700 for Suffolk. So Nassau's really catching up.
Well, it sounds like Nassau is being hit now. Rich, K2UPS, are you in Pennsylvania? Are you heading east? Over to you, Rich, K2RIW.
K2UPS Mobile, good evening, Dick. Yes, I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm stopped right now in Somerset, Pennsylvania. It's snowing here right now, which is interesting. I think they're going to expect a few inches by morning. But the speed of that meteor that hit Russia was about 42,900 miles per hour.
Wasn't that 42,901? So you've got a couple of inches of snow, and I think that particular weather storm is heading to the east. Does that mean we're going to be getting that in a couple of days? Rich, what do you think? K2UPS, K2IW?
Well, it is heading east to some extent. It's not a couple inches now, currently. It's just starting to snow here, but they're expecting several inches by morning. But I'll be home by then.
So you're ahead of that storm, and as you travel, you won't be seeing snow. But when snowflakes are falling, does that change the speed at which you can travel up home, Rich?
To some extent, you know, if it starts building up on the road surface, then you got to slow down. But I got sensors on the vehicle that let me know if the wheels start to lose traction, and I have thermometers monitoring the outside temperature. So I try to stay on top of that and don't want to get into the sliding stuff.
The ISS sighting, I think that's going to be in the very early morning hours of the 31st of October. Is that true, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
Oh, yeah, that would be what, Halloween. That was, 31st, that morning, the Tuesday morning, from 6:12 to 6:18. So, well worth it. It's supposed to be a clear morning. We'll see what happens. You know, clouds come in and it's all over.
Are you planning to see this particular event?
No. You know, this, I make this announcement for people that are going to be getting up to go to work in the morning. Now, I'm more of the nighttime person when these things come flying overhead. last one I saw was about, it's got to be about 6 weeks ago. And it keeps switching. Like, right now you have a lot of AM time coming up for the next 10 days. And then eventually it shifts, you know, depending on the orbital mechanics. Next thing you know, you're into the PM. And of course, that's much better.
Now, Paul, are there other subjects you would like to cover? Or do you think we should quit a little early tonight? The choice is yours. WS2N, with space report number 274, K2RIW.
Yeah, we could quit early. I just had the one thing I was going to bring up is the Dawn mission is still flying. The Dawn mission has been in operation since 2007, and it had launched on a Delta II rocket. And that has the ion engine on it. It's actually three ion engines on the back of it. And that's the one that had gone into orbit around Vista, the asteroid, in the asteroid belt, and stayed there for about a year and a half, and then deorbited that and went to Cirrus. And it's presently in orbit around Cirrus, which is much bigger. Cirrus is about, 600 miles in diameter. And that's about twice as big as Vista. So it's got two failed, I call them, what are they, gyros, yeah, they're gyros, you know what I mean, they keep the attitude of the spacecraft correct. They had four, two of them failed, so now they're working with two, and they're using a lot of fuel to keep everything in plane.
Are they calling those gyros, or are they calling them inertial wheels? And I'm amazed that the gyros or inertial wheels, whatever it is that's on Voyager, has lasted so long. They must be using some other technique. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, Voyager has them too, but they use a, they call it a dead band reckoning, where the whole thing just stays straight, doesn't rotate, doesn't turn. But this is different. This is going around an asteroid, and they really need three. They go with four. One's a backup. One failed, and then eventually another one failed. But they had plenty of fuel on board to keep, you know, hydrazine fuel to keep it going. The last couple of years, it's been working good. But that fuel was starting to dwindle, so they had two choices, you know, fire up the ion engines and deorbit and go to somewhere else. And that was the choice, but they've decided to leave it in orbit around Sirius. And they'll keep it in operation for, you know, as long as they possibly can. And now they're going into a lower and lower location to get better pictures. They have instruments on board Dawn that they're able to utilize to get more science out of it. So it's just amazing to know that the ion engine is still working. Here it is, you know, 10 years later, and still doing good. Amazing engineering, what's going on. Back to you.
I seem to remember that at least one of the asteroids has a moon going around it. That's question number one. And question number two, is there any talk of landing that spacecraft onto the asteroid as they get lower and lower? Over to you, Paul.
No, I haven't heard that yet. There's one called, I think it's Matterhide, and it has a moon called Ida going around it. That's at least one that I know of. So that, you know, that's nothing to do with Vista or Sirius. But, yeah, they can have little teeny tiny moons going around and things. So, I'm going to say something about Dawn. Oh, it launched on a Delta II rocket. So Delta II is coming to an end. They've had roughly 150 launches of the Delta II rocket over the years, since the late 1980s. You know, it successfully has launched robotic missions like Spirit to Mars, Opportunity to Mars. They've done a lot of launches, over 150, and that's going to come to an end. And they're launching one coming up this week. Well, actually, had a date. There's going to be the day before Halloween, October 30th, and it's a NOAA launch from California, from Vandenberg, and they're going to be doing a polar orbit. And there's only one more left after this, and that'll be actually over a year from now, and that will be the end of the Delta II project, all the rockets that have been very successful. You know, everything's starting to change. You've got SpaceX now, and all these different companies that are involved with doing what NASA has done for decades.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Well, back to you.
The asteroid that the satellite is going around right now, I think it said it's 600 miles in diameter. What's the shape of that asteroid, Paul? Is that potato-shaped, or by the time they get to 600 miles in diameter, does it start getting pretty round? Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, that one's very round. Yeah, once you have enough mass, that's what happens. And Vista was like that, too, at 300 miles. So, you get something smaller than that, you can wind up with potato-shaped-looking asteroids or some of the comets are strange-looking. Look at the one Rosetta was around. Rosetta was launched. The one around that comet, it looked like maybe two comets stuck together. It looked like a big dumbbell flying through space. They get those strange shapes when they're a lot smaller. But, you get up to 300, 400, 500, 600 miles, and you're going to wind up with a sphere. They think there could still be liquid water at the center of this thing. So, they're doing radar studies with Dawn, and they're showing strange readings coming back to you.
I'm very forgetful of the 600-mile diameter asteroid. Name it again. Is that essentially the biggest asteroid we know of, Paul? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Ceres, spelled with a C. At one time, they considered it a planet when it was first discovered. And then, of course, that got downgraded as time went on. I guess you would consider it now I'd call it a dwarf planet, because they've categorized everything because of this Pluto deal. But it's very big. I could predict someday people actually landing on this thing. I can see that happening. By the way, we have landed on an asteroid before, so that's more or less a question that you had before. We had something called the near spacecraft that landed on Eros. We have an asteroid called Eros that wasn't a planned thing. And they said, let's see if we can slow this thing down enough. And they did, and actually landed on it. They were able to send signals out after it landed. Back to you.
Did it take off again, or is it still there, Paul?
It's still there for eternity. So, I guess in the future, we'll send a spacecraft there, grab a hold of it, bring it back to the Smithsonian or something. But yeah, that was a near spacecraft. And it was a boxy looking thing, and it had solar panels sticking out. It exploded down to the point where, they were able to just kiss the surface, and that was it. Stay there.
Does it have enough to...
Repeater, time out.
Does it have enough thrust to take off again, do you think?
No, there was no... Well, if there was, everything shut down. Computers down, everything's off. But they had no plans on relaunching it again. They landed it there, and they got some last-minute pictures with data, and that was it. That was in orbit around Eros for quite a long time, and then they decided, what do we do with it? That's what happened.
Ceres is 600 miles in diameter. I'll bet you there are a number of moons going around, a number of planets that are very close to that diameter. Question number one. And tell me once again the diameter of Pluto. Ceres is how many times smaller than Pluto? Over to you, Paul.
One of Charon is that big. I think Charon's a little bit bigger. And that's the moon that's going around Pluto. Pluto's what? 1,600 miles? If you remember, 1,600 miles. I'd have to check. But, many moons. You got Callisto and Ganymede, Io, I'm sure they're all in that range.
Io, Europa, Ganymede, Callisto, the four major moons of Jupiter. I'll bet you they're a little bit bigger than 600 miles, but maybe not much.
W2HO.
Mr. HO, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just was just recently tuned in. Good morning. touched on this at all. Season, if you did, okay. I don't want to ask you to repeat it. If it was, if you heard about the NASA discovered a, didn't know what it was that entered into the solar system, that they believe that it came from out of the solar system. Did you hear about that? Did you touch on that tonight there, gentlemen? Over.
Yes, we did. We discussed that for about 10 minutes. You want to give them a quick thumbnail squish?
The ones that they found out are the biggest. They look at the orbit. there should be a planet, and it should be as massive as Neptune, and they're hunting for it. I mean, all kinds of telescopes hunting for it. And according to one guy that's an expert in this field that I saw a documentary on, they interviewed him. They said it's not a question of if, it's a matter of when they have to. They have to go for it. No, it's out there. But the light that it's giving off might be so little, it might be a dark planet. It's very hard to see.
The other one, Voyager 2, kept going to Neptune.
you know, actually Uranus and Neptune pick up be that way. So by taking it, you know, time goes on, you're just slowing down. Apollo to the moon. Yeah, we left here at 25,000 miles an hour. But, you know, midway between here and the moon, and pick up speed until they reach the moon. Put their speed back up. So, same thing happened. The yellow planet boys might have never left. And they're now traveling still around almost 40,000 miles around. This is a spacecraft that have left the solar system. We want to talk about the fastest to another planet. That would be the Juno spacecraft that's now in orbit around Jupiter. When that went into orbit, it went into such a tight orbit that in relation to
is that the fastest man-made object to your knowledge, Paul?
Yeah, fastest in relation to a piece of land. Now, you know, in other words, going into orbit, it was deorbiting by its retroact. So as it was close to Jupiter, it was 140,000 miles. Like something else, their question.
Yeah, the Earth moving 19 miles a second around the sun turns out to be around 10 miles an hour.
AC2TS, I'm still with you, Dick. Well, that was fun, and I look forward to next week. And someone in the chat room passed by and dropped off a physics question about Galileo, so I have at least one question for next week, and hopefully there'll be more. Thank you very much for letting me do this, and it's been loads of fun. And we'll be all next week for the same stuff.
Okay, very good. I forgot to ask you guys what was the price at the flea market today, but we'll get to that next week. WS2N for any comments, and did you get a chance to go to the Weimark Hammerama or flea market, Hamvention, whatever it was? Oh, you were Paul, K2RW. I didn't get a chance to go.
No, people on the air talking about it, but no, I didn't go. Roy, 73 to you. Have a good day. It's going to take some time before we get emails coming in. You know, it's been a big blank. I wonder if some people even know that we have an email service coming back in operation. So, very good. Glad you got one in there. We'll say 73, and we're up to, I'm looking at the computer now, over 40,000 people without power on the island. Went from, what, around 4,000 sitting in a net 4 hours later.
Roy, did you get a chance to go to the flea market today?
So I did. It was loads of fun. I got to meet a whole bunch of people. I had a chat with Eric, and I had a chat with a lot of people. I won a little $10 discount on a... some company that sells adapters for cables, and had loads of fun.
Did you have a sign across your chest saying who you were?
No, I had just a small badge ID, and you know, when I would start to talk to people, they would look at my badge, and they would kind of go, "Oh yeah, Roy, okay."
That's a good sign. That's a very good sign. Bye bye, you all. See you next week. Keep your eyes to be clear, but listening.
K2RWWHYY, I'm contactable by email only. I don't have phone service. Catch you later. Bye bye.
Roger, Roger.
Thank you.
at 830 WQVL. Repeater system.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Thank you.